You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we return here with another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire. We return here on Thursday, and that does mean it is another crossover Thursday. We'll be diving into it all with James Rapine and Jake Liskow of Locked On Bengals as the Ravens are set to take on that Cincinnati Bengals team. The Ravens come in at 5-1 in first place in the AFC North, and Cincinnati comes in 4-2 in that second place spot. So a big divisional matchup on the way for this Ravens team. And so that'll be our second and third segments as we talk with Jake and James about the Ravens and the Bengals. Here in this first segment, though, there's a lot of news to dive into from yesterday as players returned to practice, players didn't report to the team, there's injury reports, all that. We have a couple more mailbag questions to get into. So there's a lot to dive into in this first segment. So let's dive into it all. First, though, if you are listening to us anywhere you get your podcast in audio form, so that's Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere you get your podcast, where they're waiting Monday through Friday at 6 a.m. Eastern Time. If you're following along with us in video form on YouTube, be sure to subscribe to the channel, like the video if you are enjoying our content. Our first goal here for the YouTube channel is 1,000 subscribers. And also be sure to follow me on Twitter at ChaosShirker34 and the Locked On Ravens Twitter account at Locked On Ravens. So with all that being said, let's dive into it all here. We'll start off with the injury report, then dive into a bit of the news surrounding the team, then finally get into the last bit of the mailbag. So starting off here with the injury report, I'll pull it up, the first one for Wednesday. I'll just run through it. We'll talk about it for a little bit. Center Bradley Bozeman with a back injury did not practice. Justin Houston with a rest day did not participate. Outside linebacker there. Running back Latavius Murray with an ankle did not participate. Cornerback Jimmy Smith, another rest day, did not practice. Alejandro Villanueva with a tackle with a knee injury did not participate. Wide receiver Sammy Watkins with his thigh injury did not practice as well. Cornerback Tavon Young with a knee injury did not participate. And finally, linebacker Patrick Queen with his thigh injury was a limited participant. So overall, when looking at this injury report, it's nothing that wasn't unexpected for me. I think that this was rather in line with my expectations with Bozeman and even Watkins. Ronnie Stanley no longer had that injury report because he is on injured reserve. He's done for the season. But I think that with Murray and Queen and Bozeman, those were the three who got injured against Los Angeles, at least the three that we saw kind of go down and it was weird. Bozeman came back in the game, then left. Queen came back in the game, then was taken out. Murray was the only one to really not return. It'll be huge to see how they participate in practice both today and tomorrow. If I had to guess, and again, this is just me doing some guesswork, I would expect Latavius Murray doesn't play in this one, where Bradley Bozeman and Patrick Queen will. I also don't expect Sammy Watkins to play again. But if they do return in at least a limited fashion today, that goes a long way. And I want these guys to play. I just think with the ankle injury and with the thigh injury, those are things that can take a little while to heal depending on the severity of them. So we'll see how they end up progressing throughout the week. Hopefully they'll all be available because they are all key parts to what this team does on both the offensive and defensive sides of the ball. Another injury note, though, and this is a positive piece of news, Nick Boyle, designated to return from injured reserve by the Ravens. He now has a 21-day window of practice before he has to be activated from injured reserve, and he practiced on Wednesday. Now, it was more individual stuff. It was just like kind of ramping up for him, and honestly, for him, I don't anticipate he will be activated before the bye week. We talked about this yesterday on Locked On Ravens. We got a question for the mailbag from it. So I'd say that he'll probably be activated after the bye, anywhere in that week 9 to week 12 range, probably a bit sooner rather than later. I mean, he has to be activated before week 12 because of the 21-day window. So he'll be back, it seems like. It seems like he has done all of the necessary steps. Now he just has to ramp up. And apparently, this team is very excited about him, and they should be, you know, because he's a big part of what they do on offense, and he's been working very, very hard. John Harbaugh talked about how hard he's been working to get back onto the football field. So I'm really happy for Nick Boyle. I'm happy for this Ravens team that they're getting him back, and he's, again, a huge part of what they do on the offensive side of the ball. But now in more interesting news, I don't even know what word to put on it. We talked about the Ravens claiming offensive tackle Brandon Knight from the Dallas Cowboys. That was a move that was made on Monday. Brandon Knight did not report to the team You know, John Harbaugh kind of alluded to it a little bit. He was asked about it, and he said, yeah, it was actually in an article that the Ravens wrote, BaltimoreRavens.com wrote, and at the bottom of it was a Nick Boyle article. And at the bottom of that article, it said, yeah, also, you know, pretty much FYI, Brandon Knight didn't report to the team. So Baltimore puts him on the reserve, did not report list. So the logistics behind this and what this whole situation is there was apparently a personal decision, and John Harbaugh said, yeah, it was a personal decision. You know, he will be the guy to talk to about that, much like what he said about Ben Mason and that Ben Mason situation. John Harbaugh was mad about that Ben Mason situation, and I'm sure he's not thrilled about this either. The Ravens were getting a solid tackle, a depth piece, and now all of a sudden that's very much in question now. So while he's on the did not report list, he will not count against Baltimore's 53-man roster. His salary will not count against the salary cap, and he's not allowed to go sign with any other team or something like that. Baltimore has his playing rights. So unless he's taken off that list or the Ravens get rid of him, like releasing him or something, he's not eligible to go to another team. So he's stuck on that list until a resolution ends up being met by both him and the organization. But just a weird situation all around. You know, I don't know what the personal decision is. It's very up in the air right now. It could be anything. So it'll be a situation to monitor for sure. We'll see how it ends up getting resolved. But for right now, Brandon Knight is on the team, but he's not really on the team. So we'll see how that goes. And, you know, finally here, we'll talk about a couple of mailbag questions. We talked about a question yesterday, kind of talking about the pass offense as well as the run offense by Joshua Sutter. And he asked about T. Williams, and I didn't know what he meant by that. I assumed it was Tyson Williams, but he talked to me. He reached out earlier yesterday and said, hey, I meant T. Martin, not T. Williams. So yes, T. Martin has been a huge part of this. Just so that people know the question, he said, I'd like to know your thoughts on the passing game outside of Lamar Jackson. It looks like the offseason acquisition of T. Martin is really paying off in a big way for Baltimore so far. So yes, the additions of T. Martin, and you know, I'll go as far as to say Keith Williams as well. These coaching staff additions have been really, really good in terms of what this offense has evolved into right now. Putting those offensive minds around Greg Roman, who has a very good offensive mind of his own, really helps this team in a lot of different ways because, you know, every offensive mind, every football mind that you can bring into an organization, it presents new ideas. You can build things off of those ideas. And we've seen it in practice, right? The soccer ball drills that these new coaches have put into place and have become a really big part of what they do and have helped, it looks like, these receivers catch the football a bit better. But it's the passing concepts a bit. It's having guys relate to the players a bit. And these coaches, T. Martin and Keith Williams, have been around the NFL game for a little while, or just football in general, whether it's, you know, being around the NFL game with just the Ravens, or whether they have had college coaching experience or whatever it may be. They've been around the game of football for a very long time. Keith Williams has worked with Tyreek Hill and Devontae Adams and even Sammy Watkins before this as a personal coach. So they know what it takes to win at this NFL level, the college level, whatever, maybe just football in general. And I'm very pleased with these additions so far because we've seen it. So, you know, Marquise Brown having a really good year. Rashad Bateman looked really good in his debut. Sammy Watkins. We've seen Devin Duvernay and James Prochet step up in a big way. So these receivers, I think, are benefiting not just from the improvement of Lamar Jackson, but also from, I'll call it, the improvements in the coaching staff. A lot of people questioned what David Culley was doing for this team, the organization. The football world in general has very high respect for what David Culley does, but his passing offenses and the offenses he's worked with have not been particularly great over the course of the last couple of seasons. So, you know, Culley's now doing his thing in Houston, and I'm happy he got that opportunity, but the Ravens, I think, did a great job with hiring some coaches to replace him, and so far we've seen those benefits pay off in a big way. Next year, though, finally, before we head into our first break, we'll be talking about a mailbag question from Cody Rolls, who asks, what do you think of the Ravens using Duvernay in a Cordarrelle Patterson-type role? And so what that Cordarrelle Patterson-type role is, you know, Patterson started off as a wide receiver. He was a first-round pick by the Minnesota Vikings. It didn't really work out for him at wide receiver, so he was transitioned into running back. It is more of like a pass-catching running back threat, but he also runs the ball really well. Devin Duvernay has not had the most opportunities at wide receiver. But overall, I think that, and you know, no slight to Cordarrelle Patterson, but I think Devin Duvernay is a much more talented receiver than Cordarrelle Patterson. So we saw last year and even this year too, the Ravens using Devin Duvernay, you know, jet motions and jet sweeps and all those types of things. So I think that DuVernay is an emergency running back. Like, if the Ravens are down all their backs in a game, they need a guy to run the football. Devin DuVernay would probably be that guy who you line up in the backfield. But I think to be that pure Cordarrelle Patterson type player, it would probably be him shifting away from wide receiver more than the Ravens would want him to. I think they want him to develop in that wide receiver role. So, look, I don't hate the idea of having DuVernay be a gadget player, for lack of a better term for it. But he also is a talented wide receiver, and I think the Ravens intend to develop him there. And he's looked a lot better this year. You know, with more opportunities, he's looked better. So I'm excited to see how DuVernay progresses as a weapon, you know, whether that is catching the football, running it, or whatever, in this Ravens offense for sure. We're going to head into our first break, though. When we get back, we're going to be diving into Crossover Thursday with Jake Liskow and James Rapine of Locked On Bengals. So stay tuned for that, and we will be back soon. But before we do that, this episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing only brand the warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Save time and money when using Rock Auto. Rock Auto is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. Rock Auto prices are reliably low for every customer. So go to rockauto.com right now and see the parts available for your car or truck. Right, Locked On, that had you hear about us, Box Lando, we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices. All the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. And we return here with our second segment of this Thursday edition of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher, your host, still hanging out with you here. And we're now going to dive straight in to our Crossover Thursday with Locked On Bengals, their host Jake Liskow and James Rapine. So without any further ado, let's get right into it. And we are with our crossover here, Locked On Ravens, Locked On Bengals. Kevin Ostreicher of Locked On Ravens here with Jake Liskow and James Rapine of Locked On Bengals. And we're talking about the first versus second place matchup in the AFC North here in Week 7, the Ravens coming in at 5-1, the Bengals coming in at 4-2. No, it's not the Cleveland Browns and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Cincinnati off to a phenomenal start this year. So we're going to start off this segment talking about the Ravens offense going up against the Cincinnati defense, which honestly, guys, has impressed me. I didn't know how these new pieces would fit in. They added a lot of veterans to this defense. But obviously with the task of stopping Lamar Jackson, the Ravens' very potent, not only run offense, but also passing offense. What's the mood like in Cincinnati right now in terms of how this defense is trying to focus on stopping such a dynamic player in Lamar Jackson?
I think that's the exciting challenge of Week 7 here. And that's where the conversation really starts, right? It's Lamar Jackson. It's not, you know, J.K. Dobbins taking a second-year leap. He's obviously hurt, but the Ravens' running game has continued unabated. The Ravens, as a team, seem to have continued unabated despite a rash of injuries. So let's start with that matchup. Obviously, Lamar Jackson kills you off-script, scrambling. The Ravens running a lot of gap scheme stuff this year. How do you see this matchup working with a revamped offensive line? Is Ben Power still going to be missing? Obviously, like Villanueva maybe stepping in at left tackle. How's Kevin Zeitler fitting? And how do you see those guys going against a guy like DJ Reader and that matchup in the non-Lamar Jackson run game, which, you know, is obviously built around Lamar Jackson, but it's still been very successful for the Ravens this year?
Yeah, the Ravens run game this year has actually been, you know, you mentioned J.K. Dobbins and obviously Gus Edwards, who both were lost for the year. With their injuries, they've been working with guys like Latavius Murray and Le'Veon Bell, Devonta Freeman, veteran backs. And this wasn't like the Ravens lost Dobbins and Edwards a month or two before the regular season and they had the time to work in the preseason. They lost these guys like 10 days before the season started. So they were trying to figure out how to incorporate these guys in. So the running backs as a whole haven't been as impressive this year. The offensive line you mentioned, Ronnie Stanley a couple days ago just announced, you know, he's going to be done for the year. He only played in one game. So Villanueva is stepping in at left tackle, but he's been dealing with a knee injury himself. So with Bradley Bozeman also dealing with a back injury, their starting center, Ben Powers will be there at left guard. Kevin Zeitler's looked the part. He's Kevin Zeitler. He's been a steady veteran for his entire career. And then on the right side, Patrick McCary, who's been great. Going up against the Bengals defensive line, you know, you mentioned DJ Reader. I think Trey Hendrickson has played well this season. They have a bunch of pieces on the defense. So I think a big key to this is the Ravens run game starting off fast. Against Indianapolis in Week 5, for example, they averaged just 3.4 yards per carry on the ground. Against the Los Angeles Chargers, and to be fair, that's a decently bad run defense. They average 4.9 yards per carry. So I'm interested not just in the run game, but also this pass game has been improved for Lamar Jackson and just his ability to throw the football. He's taken that leap. And so in the back end for Cincinnati, you know, obviously Jesse Bates is there, one of the best safeties in the NFL. Jadobe Awuzie has looked great this year. With Marquise Brown and Rashad Bateman, there might not be Sammy Watkins in this one. Do you see the Cincinnati defense matching up well with this Ravens passing offense, or do you think that some of the speed could be a challenge?
No, I think it is a good matchup. The Bengals have faced, you know, some good receivers this year so far. You think about the Vikings, what they present. And then a couple weeks ago, it was Devontae Adams and Aaron Rodgers and having to deal with that. So I think the one area would be, yeah, the secondary should feel confident that they can contain Hollywood Brown, even though he's played pretty well this year. Rashad Bateman's such a almost a wild card. You don't know what to expect because we haven't seen much of him this year. Obviously, he came back last week. But the one guy that is scariest, not named Lamar Jackson, for this Bengals defense is Mark Andrews in how they contain him, because he crushed Von Bell last year in this first matchup, and that was certainly something that was on Von Bell's mind this offseason. It feels like the Bengals have gotten better at guarding tight ends, but Mark Andrews is, you know, arguably their number one option in that passing game. So how do they handle it? In the thing that I've noticed with Kevin with Lamar this year, it seems like he's, you know, scrambling just like he always does and has, but he's still looking downfield and he's making big plays downfield. And so that's the part that will be a challenge for this secondary, sticking with Hollywood Brown, not just for 3 seconds, but for 4.5 seconds while Lamar runs away from Trey Hendrickson and company in the backfield.
Yeah, that's one of the great things about Lamar Jackson, and there are many, but the time he creates with the football, and the difference with him as opposed to maybe some other scrambling-ish quarterbacks is the fact that he's a threat if the defense has everything covered perfectly, everything is set. If Lamar Jackson is not accounted for, he can burn a defense for 20, 30 yards on a play where a defense really does everything right. So with Jackson and his scrambles this year, it honestly feels like he's doing it less. And you mentioned it, James, kind of focusing not only just throwing the football a bit more, but throwing it down the field. His deep ball accuracy has improved this year. It's not perfect. You know, he still has missed some throws, but he has definitely improved in that area. And that leap I was talking about, a lot of people were expecting him to take it. I'm sure the narratives you guys have heard him about, oh, if this Ravens team is down, they can't come back with Lamar Jackson throwing the football. And, you know, if you stop the Ravens run game, that can't happen. Well, that's not been the case. Teams have been keying in on the Ravens run game and stopping it. And Lamar Jackson has said, all right, I'm going to do it myself with my arm. And that's been a really key part of this offense. But both the Ravens and the Bengals in the 2020 draft did a little bit of drafting at the linebacker position. And I know for Cincinnati, both Logan Wilson and Akeem Davis-Gaither have been really big parts of this Bengals defense. Now, let me put on the record, Logan Wilson's comment was a compliment. First of all, I just want to put that out there. No speculation from me about that. It was a compliment. But I think Wilson's played really well this year, and his growth has been a big part of how this Bengals defense has stepped up to the plate this year. So what do you expect the keys for these linebackers to be going up against this Ravens offense?
Well, they need to play disciplined, and all three might be on the field together for really the first time in an extended game this year, because the Ravens, I assume, are going to be in, you know, 12 personnel for most of the game. Is that true? So let's start there. But before I answer your question too much, are the Ravens going to be two tight ends for a lot of the game, or tight end and fullback for a lot of the game?
Early on, I think that could be what you see. The Ravens are trying to work in more pass happy formations in there. But I think, you know, with Eric Tomlinson, who's been replacing Nick Boyle in their two tight end sets this year, he's pretty much Boyle light and he's been playing really well. So it's pretty much like having an extra offensive lineman on the field. I do think that they'll be in 12 personnel, but we'll see how the game and that game script is really important for it too.
And they love Patrick Ricard as well, I know, at fullback. So, I mean, I think that combination, you know, you'll see the Bengals stay in a 4-3, maybe a little bit more. We talked about this yesterday with our film guy, our regular film guy, Mike Santagata, Bengals Sands, and the Ravens are one of the only teams that'll get the Bengals out of their kind of 5-2 front and into the 4-3, where they'll put an extra linebacker on the field at times to deal with Lamar Jackson. It'll be interesting to see if that continues this year, or if they go with, you know, last year, perhaps they did it because of personnel. They're starting interior defensive linemen off the street. This year, DJ Reader healthy. Larry Ogunjobi comes from the Browns, playing well at three tech. Josh Tupou didn't practice today, but of course, everybody knows tackled Lamar Jackson in the open field at 300-plus pounds once, so that's pretty good. B.J. Hill, the Bengals acquired for Billy Price, and he's been really good. So with those guys, maybe they do more of the 5-2 stuff in the defensive front and ask Sam Hubbard to be the contained guy. And Trey Hendrickson, while he's been a good pass rusher, he's made 2 tackles this year that aren't sacks. The tackle radius issues have come up at times for him. He's got a little bit short arms going on. And so while he's a really good athlete, he hasn't been as good against the run. And so that, I think, is a challenge for the front seven in general. And against this team, always it's discipline, right? If you get out of your gap in the run game against the Ravens, they seem to know how to punish it frequently. The good news for the Bengals is they've been really good in that area this year. Whereas Ravens fans might be used to a Bengals team that is giving up, and the Ravens have run all over the Bengals for years, given up the run. This year, it truly does look like it's a transformed unit as far as run defense goes. And a lot of that starts with DJ Reader and the defensive line, keeping the linebackers free. And the linebackers then using their athleticism, which the Bengals haven't had at that position for quite some time, to clean it up. So I'm excited to see that matchup. That's something that's gone the Ravens' favor and the Ravens' way for, you know, the last 2-3 years, maybe a little bit longer. And this year, maybe the Bengals have the guys to stick with it. And on the other side of the ball, it's going to be interesting to see if this is a low-scoring affair. Two defenses that are playing pretty well. So we'll talk about the Bengals' offense and how they match up with the Ravens' defense coming up next.
Hey, whether you're a Ravens fan or a Bengals fan, you should get to betonline.ag to wager on the game. Right now, the Ravens favored in this one, according to BetOnline. So maybe you think Joe Burrow and the Bengals are going to pull off the upset, or maybe you think Lamar Jackson's going to improve to 6-0 against the Bengals as a starter. Either way, BetOnline is the place to go. And you can check out their new updated desktop or their mobile website, which is new and improved as well. And you could sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with promo code Locked On. And it isn't just NFL. They got your college football. They got your NBA. You got your Major League Baseball playoffs and so much more in one spot. BetOnline.ag. So use promo code Locked On to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports.
All right, so I just talked a lot about what the Bengals defensive front has done differently this year and how that might be a little bit different. So I'm not going to talk so much this time, but looking at the Ravens defense, they're obviously dealing with injuries on this side of the ball as well. But you still got Chuck Clark, you still got Marlon Humphrey, Calais Campbell is playing great, and Josh Bryan's revenge game, as you guys discussed in the pre-show. Is this Ravens defense a sum greater than its parts, would you say? Or what's keeping them together? What's keeping them cohesive?
Yeah, well, one of the guys you mentioned in Chuck Clark, I think, has been really, really key for them. He's having a career year this year. He's playing great football. He wears the green dot for them on that defense. And I think a lot of people, the perception on Chuck Clark coming into this year was he was just kind of an average safety, didn't really do a ton well, was okay in coverage, was okay in the run game coming up, but he plays so many different roles for them. ESPN put up a graphic during the Week 5 Monday night game where the Ravens played the Colts, and he's played almost everywhere on that defense. He comes up and plays a really nice dime linebacker. He can play at the free safety spot, strong safety spot. He's really a do-it-all type of guy. He's improved in coverage phenomenally, and his counterpart there in Deshaun Elliott has also played great football. The Ravens have a ton of decisions to make with free agency this year, just with how great their 2018 draft class was. One of those players also Anthony Averett, who's filling in for Marcus Peters, who went down for the year with a torn ACL. He had a really bad game in Week 5, but other than that, he's played really good football. So they have a bunch of guys who believe in each other. You mentioned Calais Campbell. Last week against the Chargers, he literally threw a Chargers offensive lineman across the formation. He's playing all world levels right now. The video of it's insane if you do want to check it. I think Michael Crawford of Ravens would have put that out there. But he's playing great. The Ravens are missing. I mentioned Peters, Derek Wolfe also. Patrick Queen is a bit banged up in this one. But as a unit, they've struggled against the past. They're now starting to kind of bring that back a bit against the high-powered Chargers offense. They did a really good job. But one of the matchups that I want to look at here are the two former LSU teammates in Joe Burrow and Patrick Queen. Now, Patrick Queen had a great game against the Bengals the first time these two teams matched up, and that was the only time Burrow did play against the Ravens. And we'll get into this a bit later, but the Ravens defense having 7 sacks against Burrow in that offensive line. But with Joe Burrow, he is improved. I mean, it's such a high level this year, and he's really showing why not only he was the number one pick, but why all of Cincinnati was excited for his return this year. The weapons around him are great. He's playing great football. How is Joe Burrow going to get the better of the Ravens defense in this one if he can do it?
Well, it's all, to me, it's going to come down to the pre-snap and his ability to read through the disguises that Wink Martindale is going to put together and those different pressure packages that he's going to put together. And Burrow, statistically, has been much better against the blitz this year. Hasn't been blitzed as much, but I expect him to get blitzed a ton this weekend, this Sunday in Baltimore. And, you know, that's something, you know, Kevin, this Ravens defense, that's what they like to do. They're going to blitz you 40, 45% of the time. They're going to try to disguise it. They're going to try to get after you in different ways. And you see, and we covered it earlier this week with Bengal Sands, like Jake said, when we had him on, sometimes Burrow misreads it and diagnoses it wrong. And maybe they're on empty and there's a free runner or something like that. And that is going to be such a backbreaker on the road at M&T Bank Stadium, because if you get that crowd involved and everything like that, and you get in second and third and long, well, good luck. Even if you do read it right, it's going to be a long day. So I think that we're going to see how much Burrow learned from that matchup and how much he's grown pre-snap and as a quarterback mentally, as much as anything on Sunday against the Ravens. And, you know, I think he's up for the challenge, but that's the part of it that's going to get tested, because this offensive line, I don't think it's a world beating offensive line by any stretch, but it's better than it was last year in Week 5 when Burrow and the Bengals laid an egg in Baltimore. His weapons, I think, fit better, right? You know, Ja'Marr Chase is better than what they had in AJ Green last year. T. Higgins should be 100% healthy. Same with Joe Mixon, had a big game last week. So he should have his full complement of receivers, and CJ Uzama, who didn't play in that game last year as well. So I think it's going to come down to the pre-snap and how he's able to diagnose things.
Yeah, it's a really good point, James. And this Ravens defense, you mentioned, is how often they blitz. I mean, literally, Don Martindale will send 7, 8 guys at the line. One play, he'll send all of them. The next play, he'll drop all but 3 or 4 back. So it's about those pre-snap, you know, Burrow pre-snap diagnosis, which I think is going to be huge for him. But, you know, you mentioned the Bengals offensive line and how they are better this year. And then that's key for them, because I think it couldn't have got a lot worse. I mean, Riley Reiff's given them 50 million times the production Bobby Hart would give this team at this point. So overall, how impressed or not have you been with the new pieces on this Bengals offensive line? Because I talked about Reiff, Jackson, Carmen is there, the Bengals second round pick. Are you happy with how they performed through 6 weeks?
Reiff has been a solid performer. They've been comfortable leaving him on an island much more than they were with Bobby Hart. And I think that's the biggest difference. He's not amazing, but he's at least average. And when you've watched Bobby Hart, as long as we've watched Bobby Hart and you've watched Bobby Hart, you know that average is pretty good by comparison. Jackson Carmen took a little bit of time to get into the starting lineup and then got COVID and then threw up on the field last week. So, you know, he should probably be starting this week. They were starting rookie Trey Hill, who they drafted in the 6th round to play center against Detroit. He started out the game with back-breaking penalties, came back after Carmen puked on the field and played okay the rest of the way. Still had some miscues, but was, you know, reasonable. But Carmen's been up and down, as you would expect for a guy who's making a bit of a transition from left tackle to right guard. You know, wasn't necessarily a world beater at left tackle, but has great athletic tools, and the technique is still coming along, hand placement in particular. And if Calais Campbell is getting some one-on-ones with Jackson Carmen, I'm very afraid. I'm also very afraid of if Calais Campbell gets one-on-ones with Trey Hopkins, coming off the ACL, just hasn't looked like the guy that he was before. Injuries have really piled up for Hopkins in his career. And so that's a matchup that's very concerning to me, is just that right guard center spot. But on the left side, Jonah Williams is everything that the Bengals want him to be. He's an above average left tackle. Quentin Spain looks night and day, like fantastic season, great season at left guard after he was, you know, serviceable last year and also playing all over the place. So that'll be very interesting to me to see, you know, Adafe Owe, Justin Houston, Calais Campbell, Justin Madubuike go against this remade offensive line. And I'll say this, to go back to James's point, a lot of the Bengals' protection issues have not been because of the offensive line. It's been more like Burrow knows he's got a guy hot, and then he doesn't feel the hot. He doesn't feel the guy coming, and he doesn't make the hot throw that he has to make. And that was a problem against the Lions. He's also, you know, against the Lions, we talked about yesterday on our show, he's staring down a safety. The safety's first two steps are up, and he throws a dig anyway, right where the safety's breaking, and you can't make those mistakes against a team that's a higher quality team than the Ravens, right? And so that's going to be very interesting. And on the other side, it's going to be, is it going to be Marlon Humphrey shadowing Ja'Marr Chase, right? The Bengals do present a bit of a trio of weapons that teams have started to double Tyler Boyd at times. T. Higgins has been kind of hit or miss this season, dealing with some injuries. So do the Ravens kind of play a disciplined approach? Do they look at the last couple of weeks and play too high a lot and get away from their blitz happy scheme and let Marlon Humphrey go to work? Or what are you expecting from the Ravens defense in this unique matchup with a guy that seems to get loose deep every week?
Yeah. Part of the Ravens defense is definitely limiting what teams can do deep. So despite the fact that Baltimore is a heavy blitzing defense, I don't know if they'll blitz necessarily as much, but I think they want to try because they had so much success the first time. And I'm not saying Burrow's the same player that he was week five of 2020, but you want to, I think, at least try to blitz him a lot. Now, whether you go to too high looks, I think you could see it, especially if Chase burns somebody deep once, I think Baltimore's going to start to play very conservatively and just go like bend, don't break. Where they're going to take the short stuff and they're going to give up that short stuff. But then once they get into the red zone, as Cincinnati gets to maybe the Baltimore 40, 30, then they start to play. Baltimore's defense has been known as a bend, don't break unit for a little while now, or where they will play off in a lot of situations. They'll let an opponent take what's given to them and limit the opportunities deep for a team, because they trust their red zone defense to limit the Bengals or whoever they're playing to 3 points. And I think that if you can limit a team to a kick on every possession, whether that's a punt or a field goal, that's a good success rate to win a football game. So I do think that the Ravens will blitz, but in terms of who's shadowing who, I wouldn't be shocked if they put Marlon Humphrey on the bigger receiver in T. Higgins and then go with Anthony Averett, who is a bit more of a speed corner. I wouldn't say that Humphrey's not fast, but I think profile-wise, Higgins and Humphrey match up better, and Averett and Chase match up better. Now, I wouldn't be shocked to see Humphrey on Chase the entire game. I mean, he's playing phenomenal football, and let's be real. He's been a huge catalyst now. Cincinnati has been so successful this year, so you want to try to limit that as much as you can. But I wouldn't be shocked if they go with Averett on Chase, and then they try to put Humphrey on Higgins and see how it works out. And if it doesn't, they can adjust accordingly.
We'll have to see how that all goes. What do you guys think about the spread? Let's wrap up there. The Ravens, like 6-point favorites, 6.5-point favorites in Baltimore. Are you guys buying that? I know you guys both like to make predictions.
Yeah, I'm right there. I've been back and forth with my prediction all week. I have the Ravens winning by a touchdown. So like literally I'm almost right on that line, but I think this is a much improved Cincinnati team. I mean, we were kind of talking about it, James and I, before the show started, people had this Cincinnati team at like 3 wins this year. And I'm like, this team is too talented to have 3 wins this year. You know, the AFC North is a very talented division. I think Cincinnati's defense is playing great football right now. There are still some issues, but I think the Ravens come out on top just because, you know, literally the Lamar Jackson factor. And if you want to throw Justin Tucker in there too, you can. But at the end of the day, these two teams and divisional matchups in general, they always play really good football games. In the John Harbaugh era, Baltimore's 14-12 against Cincinnati. I did not know that. I thought it was more in favor of the Ravens, actually. So these two teams play close games. Now, not recently, but it seems like over these last few weeks, Cincinnati has improved and has shown that they are, you know, vying for a spot in the playoffs so far. So I think I have the Ravens by a touchdown, but it could easily be a bit closer than that.
Yeah, I think it's, you could see the path to it being close. You know, you could see the path to it coming down to a final possession, but I think we're going to know really early on Sunday, you know, how does this Bengals offense look? How does Burrow look pre-snap? And then is he getting blitzed and does he respond the right way? Because this Bengals offense has gotten off the slow starts all season, but then they flipped a switch. I don't think you can do that. There are certain teams I don't think you're going to be able to do that against. On the road against Baltimore, if you put the pressure on your defense to stop Lamar, Lamar is going to apply too much pressure, and it's going to be, you're going to look up and it's going to be 14-3 at halftime or something, and you're going to be in an unfavorable spot. So I think it's close. I'm going to save my prediction for Thursday's show, as I always do on Locked On Bengals. But that 6 points, I see why people would struggle with that. But again, I don't want to tip my hand too much.
There you go. That is it. That is the first Bengals Ravens crossover of the year. We'll see if these teams are in fact as close as they may or may not appear. Until next time, everybody, thanks for listening to the Locked On Bengals, Locked On Ravens podcast. Have a good one.